This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food. Of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Project Isan is an NGO founded to provide free after-class tuition to underprivileged children. Under its Tuition Sayang program, this initiative has benefited about 100 children living in pockets of poverty around Selangor. Afif Sahaili and Ikman Anif are both volunteers at Project Isan, and they join me in the studio now to talk more about the program. So let's start with this. Welcome to the show. How did the idea for this project come about?
So Project Isan started with the founder, who's not here today. He came from Baling, which is a very rural part in Kedah, and he expected that people who live in the cities are actually, you know, well off and living in a good life. So when he actually got a chance to study medicine in MSU Shah Alam, that perception is kind of wrong. So he actually learned that people are actually living in a very poor state in cities. So he actually started with a book donation drive, and that actually transformed into a free tuition class with the support of a surau near Section 19 Shah Alam. So that is basically the pilot project for Project Isan, the Tuition Sayang classes, where we provide free education, additional education after class for people who are living in unfortunate circumstances.
So that's where it began. But now there are four locations, you know, with tuitions held in Shah Alam and Kerinci, as you mentioned. Why these locations in particular?
We choose based on the surroundings. We also actually have a screening where we only accept those who are from families that are from poor backgrounds. So PPR Kerinci and Shah Alam both have pockets of poverty. So we choose based on the income brackets.
You tutor students from primary 1 to form 5. That's basically everybody in school. Mm-hmm. Are the students that you meet receptive to the idea of after-class tuition? Are they keen, or are they, like a lot of kids, they just want to, you know, go out and play and not study anymore?
Yeah, they're actually quite keen. Their attendance has been very good. Possibly because they actually want to learn, but they don't have the opportunity. Their families cannot afford. So when people actually do it for free for them, they actually come. Even though, you know, nowadays kids have to go from 7 to 2, and then after 2 there are like some co-curriculum activities, and then some kelas agama or something like that, and they still come at 7:30 to be at our tuition centers. So I think because they are really, really keen that somebody is doing this for them, they want to learn. We also don't do it in the way that, you know, it's a very traditional teacher to student class. So we include games, you know, we help one by one. So they're actually receiving the learning very personally. So I think that's the reason why their attendance has been very good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's proven by our students coming from PT3 last year, and then we found out that their performance of their subjects is very low that moment, and then now it surprised us when last week they got a result, and most of them scored very wonderful. Yeah. For the exams for last few months, and we are so happy for that.
It made a sprout, so it took a year maybe, but it's worth it. Yeah.
On the flip side of from the students to the teachers, how many teacher volunteers do you need in order to keep these four locations kind of running smoothly and providing for people?
So our number of students differ from one branch to another. So for example, in Section 19 Shah Alam, we actually have about 120 students. But not 120 students come at one day because we have a timetable. So all these exam classes, so PT3, Form 5, Form 1, Form 2, we combine Form 1 and Form 2, and also UPSR actually have their own person in charges, people that are in charge of the subjects. So one subject for of one level is actually being taught by one person. So those are taken care of. So they have to come during their classes according to the timetable. For Darjah Satu, from Standard 1 to Standard 5, we actually group them together and we do a very big class. So that one, we have to have a lot of volunteers to actually control them. So for Section 19 Shah Alam, we need about minimum 20 volunteers per night.
Because we ratio them with 4 students with 1 volunteers.
So, but for Kerinci, for example, Kerinci has about 27 students. So 10 volunteers are usually enough to control the whole class. But if there are more volunteers, then we can do personal one-on-one teaching, coaching session, so which is better for the kids as well. So,
do volunteers go through any form of training?
No, we are not we're not giving any kind of training yet. But then we're planning to have a kind of training soon in September, perhaps. Yeah. We are still on planning process where we are going to give a simple briefing about our classes, briefing about how to charter this kind of group of kids. Mm-hmm. So we, because those kids are actually very fragile, coming from very, they are actually coming from very bad classes, so then they actually have no intention to study it. And when it comes to our class, they are really keen to study. So then we actually need to brief to the volunteers on how to charter this kind of the target group. By that, we are going to have one formal session soon, perhaps in September.
For example, we also get opportunities from other organizations that we are collaborating with. So, for example, occasionally we actually send our volunteers to a Jom Baca session where they got trained to teach students to read by using phonics. So this is organized by Academy Aisina.
Who would be a good fit to volunteer at Project Ihsan? Out of curiosity, because you need people, I guess, who are able to communicate. You need people who are dedicated. Who are you finding and who would be a good fit?
So our main target is actually university students, because I think being in the university, they should realize that they are privileged and they should be contributing back and look forward to contributing back to the society. It also can improve them and prepare them for, management, soft skills, in terms of soft skill development, and prepare them for their career after they graduate. So, but basically, anyone can be a volunteer. And I believe that everyone actually has their own abilities and their skill set, their specific skill sets that they can contribute to the to Project Ihsan. So we don't need just teachers. We need managers. We need people who can lead. We need people who can speak. So our volunteers have come from very different backgrounds. So we have teachers. We have doctors. We have lawyers. We have lawyers, right?
Accountant.
We have accountants. I am a software engineer. He is studying petroleum engineering. So basically, anyone is fit. We also have ex-students from Tushen Sayang branches who came to help with the kids, like the smaller kids, which is something we are proud of, because I do want them, we do want them to be involved in volunteering from the very young age.
With that said, though, you don't require volunteers to make a commitment to come to every class, and that's understandable because people are busy and sometimes it's hard. But on the other hand, does that make it harder for people to build rapport and trust with students, because they might not be the ones seeing them every day or even every week?
We do realize that problem, but we cannot actually make it a compulsory for the volunteers to come. But before we ask somebody to be a person in charge, For example, especially in Tuition Sayang Shah Alam, the sections 19-1, because so we do ask them, can you commit for every 2 weeks? Because the timetable rotates every 2 weeks, right? So in 2 weeks, you will actually only have to come once. So can you commit? And then if they say yes, then they will become the person in charge for that subject, for that form or standard. That's basically our minimum if you want to be a person in charge. So if you cannot be, you cannot commit every 2 weeks, then you will be, usually you, we will assign the volunteers to the standard 1 to standard 5. That one doesn't require a constant commitment. It's basically you just come and just help with their homeworks and everything.
I'm speaking today with Afif Sahaili and Ikman Anif, both from Project Ihsan, specifically about the work that they're doing. Up next, we find out how they're helping people learn English. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Afif Sahaili and Ikman Anif, both from Project Ihsan, which is an NGO that was founded to provide free after-class tuition to underprivileged children. They're currently working in 4 locations around Shah Alam and Kerinci. Now, you wrote on your website that Project Ihsan's objective is to help eliminate the stereotype that learning English is difficult. In your opinion, why does this stereotype exist to begin with? Why is English so scary for some?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, normal when we are facing with something that's foreign to us. To many people, English is somehow something that they think that they will not use. It's very new and they feel like learning English is difficult because it's foreign. But the problem is they have only been learning it in class where it's very formal and everything. But yeah. Casually, when we're speaking and everything, right, it's actually very practical and very, very useful. And it actually opens up a lot more opportunities for us. So we can read more books that are translated, have English translations and everything. So there have to be a mindset in these kids that saying that, okay, English is not just for the formal stuff, the hard stuff. Okay, we can read very casual things. We can watch cartoons that are in English, yeah. Stuff like that. So English is just another language.
Did the both of you ever struggle with the subject, or was English something that you found kind of okay?
For me, I'm okay with that because I'm coming with this kind of family which is practicing English as part of my language. But then for them, it's pretty hard. Because from what I know from the kids, is especially they are raising up in the society that is not practically using English as a medium. So then, even though they are trying to speak English, the sums of them will be humiliate them. So it's just kind of, that's the reason why giving a stereotype, getting more campuses to themselves.
I did not struggle with writing. But I did struggle with speaking for a while before I actually forced myself to speak. But it's the same with... I totally agree with what Ikman has been saying. I think this bashing... So when we talk in English in schools, right? For example, in my age, somehow my friends don't like it. So it's like, why are you talking in English? Use Malay. So this kind of humiliation and bashing has to stop and their mindset has to be changed.
Last weekend, a few NGOs rallied against the dual language program, which is currently in its pilot stage. The DLP gives parents and teachers a choice to use English as a medium of instruction in classrooms. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm okay with it. I think learning English is good. Learning Malay is also... So we have to be... We have to master both, right? Yeah. So... But I'm curious about the implementation. I'm curious about how we are actually achieving this. So if it's not being planned properly, it's just going to be a burden to the students, especially from the ones that are from lower income families where they cannot actually have additional classes to actually help them cope with the dual language and stuff like that. So it has to be properly thought out.
Out of curiosity, and I know it's kind of like forcing you to reveal your age in some ways, did you both do math and science, or did you both study entirely in Bahasa, or did you study in English? Yes. Because I can say that I was definitely from the Bahasa batch. You know, I never studied. I did not study math and science in English at all.
Yeah, I was. I studied in English. I was in the PPSMI stage.
Yeah, we are the second batch.
Yeah, we're actually the same age.
What was your experience with that? You know, how was it like for you making that kind of, I guess, in some ways, that language switch?
For my case, I actually learned science in BM during my primary school. And then only when I went to high school, then we switched to English. So I think the transition was okay because it's not like in the middle of primary school or in the middle of
like form two
suddenly. Yeah, it's okay. I think it benefited a lot of us as well, because when you go to the university and then you actually have to learn it in English, and then some of my friends also went overseas, which is obviously learning in English. So I think it helps, but we also have to figure out, because I studied in a fully residential school. I studied in SPP. So my friends around me, my schoolmates, are actually from those who are like smart, right? So, but we have to figure out, we don't want there's an education gap, which will also lead to like income gap in the future. So we don't want those who are left behind to always be left behind. And those who can speed up will be leaving everyone behind. So that's why we have to figure out like the middle point to all of this, so that everyone can get on board.
In my case, it's actually pretty hard for me, because I'm studying in Kelantan, so it's a very rural area. So at the beginning, it's a pretty hard for me as well to cope the situations of how study science and sciences subjects and maths in English. But then it's actually improved me a lot. Especially in English, because they talk in English, so it's give me more easier to move to when we shift to the English classes. So then it's actually giving my me the opportunity to improve my English as well. So by having this, I have the opportunity to dig more about English opportunity for me to during the classes. During that time. Thank you.
Afif, you're from a small town in Kedah, and then you developed an interest in computer science pretty early on at the age of 10, and then graduated from DePaul University in Chicago. In terms of these opportunities and education attainment, what set you apart from the kids you're trying to help? I mean, you were speaking earlier of the understanding of privilege, the importance of understanding that if you have these opportunities, you are in a privileged position. What put you in that privileged position?
So, my parents are both teachers, and I don't think we lived very well, but then I think we have enough. So in 1996, I think, my parents actually bought a very old computer, which I used to a lot. I spent a lot of my time in front of this computer. And then, you know, with all the dial-up internet connection and everything, so I actually had opportunities to actually dive into programming at a very early age. So the kids that we are having in this tuition science programs, they don't have that. They don't have that. Seriously, the closest technology that they have is smartphones, but then that doesn't have actually data plans for them to go into the internet and like learn more about, you know, just discover their interests or something. So it's very it's different, because we have resources, but they don't. And sometimes the environment that they live in also leads to this lack of opportunities. because I growing up, I met a lot of people that are from different backgrounds. So I have, okay, oh, so this guy works as this one, this guy is doing this, so I can actually, I have exposures. But these guys, the kids that we are handling actually live in an environment where everyone is, you know, from the same profession. So they don't get exposures of new fields that they can actually dive into. And, you know, the stereotype is you always become either an engineer or a doctor. And they only know, like, that much. I mean, I asked about software, who wants to be a software engineer? They
what
don't.
Is that?
Yeah, what is that? So they don't know. They don't have exposures to that. For tuition science kids, we don't only look for improving them in terms of education, academics. I mean, like exams and everything. But we also look forward into mentoring them in terms of careers. So okay, if you want to become an accountant, we have a volunteer that is an accountant. If you want to become a software engineer, we have that as well. If you want to become a writer, for example, an author, then you have somebody that's doing that as well. So that's our idea. So we provide opportunities in terms of that exposures.
Ikman, you mentioned you're from Kelantan, and you're also currently pursuing a degree in oil and gas engineering at UITM Shah Alam. Where do you think that you caught a break?
In my point of view, frankly speak, I'm coming from a very rural area, which is in Tumpat specifically, which is that can be considered as a very rural, because most of family there is coming from low income family. So actually, during my classes, when I was in schools, especially, we have no this kind of the opportunity to dig on how the volunteerism is taught during the schools. So when it comes to studying at my tertiary levels, so within that, I'm very active with my society. So I'm joining SPE, Society of Petroleum Engineers, events, competitions, even paper presentations. So with that, it scoped me. And I found out that it's actually lots of kids outside, so it's need my help, especially. And it's actually bringing out myself to become one of the drive for them to at least plan something that can give the benefits return back to the society. So by having that kind of think, I think, drive me to contribute back.
We've been talking about free tuition classes specifically, but Project Isan actually does more than that. Can you tell us about the other initiatives that you run?
Other than free tuition classes, Project Isan offering English camp. This English camp is actually a place where we motivate them to become better persons, and as well as it's an educational camp which we taught them about the how to deliver the speech, how to mingle around with the people, how to mastering the presentation skills. So there, the thing is, it's actually giving more benefits rather than maybe in the classroom. So you score full marks during the exams, if this kind of the soft skills is not being coped, then it's pointless. And so then we know that our students have having this kind of the barrier, which is the language barrier. So then we develop these modules or camps to counter this kind of a problem in the beginning of the preparations of this last year.
And I understand that you are going to be spearheading an upcoming English camp over at Langkawi.
Yes.
You know, what's going to be happening there?
There are lots of fun games there. We will give them a few slots that we're giving, including the motivational talk coming from the very professional counselors. Other than that, we have activities like Dig Bash, where there actually it's a very good step for them to know that the words or the vocabulary doesn't limit. So then it's actually a method for us to improve their everything in it, especially in English, coming from the vocabulary, grammar, writing, and even presentation skills. So there, they will have a lot of fun activity that will create the stimulate their thing to improve their opportunity to become better in, especially in English, and as well as to improve their soft skills.
So the objective of this English camp is to eliminate the stereotype, right? So for example, it's similar to what I said earlier. So basically, we have to let them know that English is casual, just like Bahasa Melayu. So we are not trying to teach them in the class, usual class learning environment. So we teach them English by using fun activities, so that they know that they can be casual with English and they have nothing to be afraid of with English. So we don't have any traditional classes in the English camp. We're not going to learn grammar. We are not going to focus. We're going to pick on their grammar. We just want them to speak their minds.
It's about getting comfortable.
Yes, yes. It's about getting comfortable yeah. with English.
How much does it cost to run these English camps as well as Project Isan as a whole?
Including Project Isan's and English camp and overall initiative that we have, it costs us almost 200,000 a year. So it's a very huge cost, and it's it's especially running solely coming from corporate contributions and as well as our crowd funds. So for this, we welcome anyone's, especially persons or any companies to contribute to us and strictly benefits our direct beneficiaries, especially the kids.
Where can the public go if they'd like to contribute?
You can log on to our Facebook at Project Ihsan. Just search Project Ihsan. Twitter as well, at Project Ihsan. Instagram. And also, you can log on to www.projectihsan.org.
What kind of support do you most require? So obviously, 200,000 a year is a big sum. Is it money or is it time? What would you need from the public right now?
So the kind of support that we require is are two things. Basically, manpower and also financial. So because, as we are expanding, we cannot do everything just by ourselves. So not just the high committees or something. So we have to expand and we have to find new people that are on board with us, with our objectives. And they are willing to lead and manage other branches, promote and call for other volunteers to come and inspire other people to help contribute back to our nation. So one is manpower and the other one is, of course, financial, because we need to run the classes, right? Yeah, so we have to buy whiteboards, we have to buy storybooks for the kids, we have to buy
stationaries,
and then we have to buy food, because
even food.
it's a very sad story that some of our kids actually come at 8 p.m. and they told us that, I haven't eaten dinner. So yeah, it's very sad, but you can only help in one. But so sometimes we provide biscuits, cookies, and sometimes we do provide them with birthday celebrations or something like that, just to make them happy and make them engage in the class and just love to come to the class. So yeah, we do need in terms of financial support for running all these kinds of activities.
You mentioned you need people in part because you need people who can maybe run these things in other cities. Mm-hmm. That's ambitious. Are you planning at the moment to expand your program to more cities?
Yeah, but we are done for this year.
Okay.
So we are just going to have whatever we have right now. But next year, we are going to add more branches. And then we actually have a plan to expand every year because we're trying to cover as many areas as possible.
Thank you both very much for coming in. I've been speaking with Afif Suhaili and Iqman Anif, both part of Project Ihsan, which is an NGO founded to provide free after-class tuition to underprivileged children. And again, if people would like to find out more about you, where can they go?
They can go to Facebook at Project Ehsan, Twitter and Instagram also at Project Ehsan, or directly to www.projectehsan.org.
Thank you both. You've been listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.